Hey, hello everyone, and hey Juan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. How about you?
All good. Very happy to be joining you today from the comfort of Mexico City. But yeah, really happy to be joining you on the first episode.
That's great. Thank you for joining the first episode for us. For the audience, this is the first episode of Hadis Tech in English, where we are going to have role models in tech communities and talk about them, about their experience and what they are doing. Welcome again, Juan. And could you like introduce yourself a little bit and tell us who is Juan and what you are doing?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for calling me a role model. I've never seen myself in kind of like that position before. I'm Pablo Flores. I'm currently the program manager, the student program manager here at GitHub, and my work is a lot of working with the students, getting to know them better and supporting them on their journey as students so that they can have successful careers once they graduate and that they can have a great life in tech.
That's great. And for supporting your students, how do you support them in with your like role and how you do that?
Well, that's a very broad question, but I think we have many different ways. One of them is to by providing them with free resources, or rather free, just like providing them with all the resources that you might need to have a successful career, and that can be from I don't know, getting access to online services that you might be interested in using without having to pay anything for them. Or to use them, and that has a ton of experience that allows the students to have a great experience, or start getting that experience to develop technology and to get involved with tech. The other side that we have is the Campus Expert Program, where we support student community leaders to become better, or to better support their communities in a way that we give them all the resources that they might need and kind of help them to advocate for their community and for students to build better communities and to support them to learn probably things that you might not learn in classes and develop some professional experiences in some cases so that they can graduate already with a bag of really cool experiences for companies while they're applying to a company. Or if you are starting your own company, you might have some experience as a student to start getting that company to work.
That's really great. And you are doing all of this under the GitHub education program, right?
Yeah, so that's just like a small part of all the things that happen. Of course, there's a lot of the things that go behind the scenes. We are also supporting, as probably you might know, the GitHub Education Stream team that is basically our rock star team of streamers that are creating content or want to get involved with creating content. So definitely kind of like setting them up for success while creating content. And you know, you were part of that program, and we are looking forward to continue to support student creators to teach or just to talk with other people while we kind of like go to hopefully the last part of this pandemic, and you know, having just like a place where you can feel belonging and a place where you can keep yourself updating about the things that are happening in the industry.
That's really great. And for that, would you like to talk about how did you start your journey and you get to at GitHub Education and start all of this stuff?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Mexico City, and definitely there was a lot of we didn't have such an energetic kind of like tech community before, especially for students, as for the time that I was when I was a student. And I think I got involved with events in an event called RoboCup in 2013, where they brought like people from all over the world, and they would kind of like bring them to make to challenge themselves to create like robots that will do like different things. There were like some small ones which were kind of like the sumo style robots that, you know, they just kind of like are super fast and push the other robot outside of the ring. And we had like way more complex robots, like the soccer team that basically were like autonomous robots playing soccer or football, depending on which country you come from. And I was just like mesmerized by watching the cool things that were happening. Like there were, I met one of the Korean campus experts during that time in 2013. And I was so, impressed by all the work that they were doing. And it was such an amazing event. I was there as a volunteer, just trying to help them out to welcome people to the country. It was here in Mexico City. So they needed like people to help them like organize and staff, kind of like all things. And I had a ton of fun and decided to kind of like keep on attending events, either like as a volunteer or as an attendee. And I got involved as a high school student in my, let's call like my high school also has like the university part. And I got involved with the tech community or the tech group in the university side, even though I was still a high school student, and helped them like organize a lot of events. So definitely I kind of like felt in love with the idea of being able to provide these spaces of, you know, where you can do like really cool stuff. You're very free to kind of like engage with people. You're very free to learn new things. And definitely that kind of like for me was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed that experience of being able to provide those spaces. And then during my time in college, I was very lucky to that I attended a lot of meetups and a lot of events. And I started to know a lot of people that were doing really cool stuff and other events. And I met a friend that is, his name is Eme Morato, and he introduced me to, we were just like talking about like hackathons and all of that. And at that time, I have already attended my first hackathon. And for me, it was a great experience. But, you know, like as a student, we were like 5 to 10 students that we were going to the same hackathons all the time. But there was no student hackathon. So we wanted to start that and kind of like understand how other countries were doing those events. And we're very lucky that Emma knew some of the folks from MLH, and we just started to talk more about like organizing the first student hackathon in the country. We did so. It was very successful. And through MLA, and then we started our own league in Mexico for kind of like, it was a replica of MLH, but in Mexico and Latam. Yeah, you know, like the fun story about that is that we had the same initials. So it was the Mexican League of Hackathons. So it was like MLH, even though like, so we were a complete like ripoff. and we started to build the first hackathons that worked really good. And then we decided to, you know, like MLH just like join. They were growing internationally. They had a team in the UK, and they were kind of like expanding globally. And they sent me an offer to grow the company in Mexico, and took it and started to grow like hackathons. And that's where I meet Joe Nash, who at that time he was managing part of the hackathon league in the UK and Europe. And we kind of like met each other and we knew each other. And then after a few months, I decided that I wanted to finish college, went back to college, it was kind of like a random DM from Joe, and he was just like, hey, we're doing like this really cool thing called the Campus Experts. Are you interested? And I was just like, okay, let's see how that goes. I was a really good, I'm still kind of like a fan of GitHub, but it's a very different kind of like relation that I have now. But definitely like I was a huge fan of GitHub and I wanted to be able to be there. And something that I was thinking a lot at the time is that, you know, like it's very rare that, or it's not that common that student programs and like these super cool programs get to LATAM so fast, or at least on during their launch. And I was kind of like surprised about that. I wanted to make sure that we could show off how cool like LATAM was. And I joined Campus Experts. I worked with Joe a couple of years on the program as a campus expert, and also kind of like I helped him to run a few parts of the program, not a lot, but a few parts. And after a few years, I finished college, which is always kind of like a good thing. After like a few years, I got invited to run the program. And we tried for so many times to do that before I got like the current role that I have. And it was really hard because GitHub as a company was very small at that time, so they were not able to hire even like contractors outside of the US. So we were getting a lot of rejections, and after like 1,000 tries, we finally made it happen. So definitely it was a lot of the things that we did was a lot of kind of like a lot of work that needed to be like consistent. And the other part was, you know, just like not accepting, not feeling low about like getting rejected. Like, you know, I kind of like kept trying and kept trying until we finally were able to make it. So yeah, I think what I was very surprised, because I was kind of like, at the time that I got the offer, I was not expecting it. And I was starting a company on my own. That was my third company. And I was kind of like weirded out that I got like this offer, because it was one of those things that I always wanted to do. And I don't know, I think it was, you know, a lot of things. It was being very lucky that I met the right people at the right time. And it was also kind of like a little bit of the work that I had done before. So definitely those two served as a great way to be able to get where I am right now.
That's really great. It's like, even the last part of it, when you advised everyone to not get low and they get rejected, it's like talking with everyone who is getting into the new career and starting their career. A lot of people like facing this kind of issues. I want to ask, like, how did the open source community help you as well? And what kind of advantages had you get beside the one that you are having right now? Like, you get to your career from it, but what kind of other stuff that you had?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've discovered during my time at GitHub is that there's no one single open source community. And what I mean by that is that there are, depending on the country where you're coming from, there are different ways in which the open source community works. If you go, for example, to the US or one of these, like, let's call it like first world countries, you might find that the community, like people do it as a hobby, people do open source as also a great way to make like money, you know, like you can contract yourself, or you can offer yourself as a contractor when people are using your open source technology so that you can make a business out of a tool that you build. Even if it's like open source, you can still make a living out of the tools that you're building in the public. But on the other side, I think Mexico has a very special way of an open source community, and the community here is more in academia. So it's not so much that we have like hobbyists contributing to open source, but rather it's kind of like something that is very well, it's much more being studied, and kind of like people that are contributing to open source work in universities, or are teachers or professors or researchers. So definitely the open source community in Mexico, even like currently, at that time and currently, is much more focused on academia and research. At that time, we were building kind of like an open source community for fun. And it was very interesting to see how people were reacting to that, because a lot of them were just like, you know, very gatekeeping teachers that didn't like that students were trying to get themselves into open source, because they were like, they have been studying open source for all their lives, and they kind of like felt that we were kind of like invading, just like making a disaster with the open source projects. But rather, we found some really cool teachers that they heavily invested time in us to be successful on the work that we were trying to do. So we created a thing called, my university's name is UNAM, well, the acronym is UNAM, and we made a thing called UNAM Engineering, where we posted, like, we had an org on GitHub, and we posted like cool repositories, we posted projects that we've built. And it was very, very interesting to see that some folks might benefit from just like us opening those projects. Like, they had like, let's say, some homework, and they needed some help with their homework, and they kind of like jumped into those repositories and find responses to some answers to the questions that they had. So a lot, we out of nowhere started to have like repositories with very high visibility, and the school hated that because we were kind of like, you know, it was our school projects and we just like open source them. And the school didn't like that much because we were kind of like giving everyone the answers. And, you know, sometimes the schools don't change like the final projects or the homework assignments through kind of like generations. And definitely that added a bit of noise to the school, but we were very lucky that nothing really bad happened. I remember one time I uploaded a final project after like a week or so that we kind of like delivered the project, or we submitted the project, and a teacher came by me, and the teacher was like furious about like finding out that I copied a project from the internet and did that as my own project, right? And I was just like, hey, you know, like that project is like something that I uploaded, something that I did, and it was a lot of fun because they never thought that a student was able to publish a public repository. And for me, that was just like, okay, there's a lot of work that we need to do to kind of like make sure that people know what we're doing and kind of like how easy it is to create or to open projects in the public. So definitely we benefited a lot from not only the people that we met. There's a few people in Mexico that have made some incredible contributions to open source, but they are not very well known. So definitely through building that open source community, we started to connect with people that were doing some incredible work. And I was very lucky that through those projects, we were able to connect with them. And it also kind of like took that imposter syndrome of, hey, I don't know if I should upload this project. I don't know if it's good enough or if anyone would find this kind of like beneficial for them. And I found through that experience that a lot of students were, even if they were not actively engaging with the project, a lot of them were using those repositories to learn. And I felt very happy about that. Like, I think that's super rewarding to, you know, like people even up to this day, they like reach out and they're like, hey, thank you for uploading this project. You really helped me out with my compiler homework. And I'm just like, wow, like, that's really cool. Like, we are helping a lot of other students to be able to submit their homework or to learn something that probably was not very clear on classes, especially right now with the pandemic, that online classes are so hard. I think that was a great way for us to kind of like support our community. And there's a few cool projects, and I don't know, I think like in general, like the whole open source community took very well that we were doing kind of like that effort. And you know, as a student, there's like a lot of benefits of being a student, and is that you get a lot of support from really cool people. So, because they're not like, oh, you're a professional, you should already know about that. But definitely they're like, hey, you're getting started, you're learning, you're trying, you want to understand this thing. And they were very open to have those conversations. So for me, it was also a lot of learning from it. And I think at that time I didn't notice how cool these people were. But now that I'm kind of like on the other side of kind of like school and I have graduated, I see their work and it's just like amazing. Like, I'm very lucky to know these people.
That's really great. And for the open source project, and when you talk about them, usually people think about it like as a big kind of projects, but you talked about like even a school homework could be open source. Mm-hmm. How could we encourage more people to get into that and to think about anything as open source and to contribute to it?
Yeah, I think I don't know, we during GitHub Universe, we're talking about inner source, which is kind of like, how do you bring open source to your company, right? Yeah. And what are some of the benefits of following the open source methodology within a company so that you can have better communication, better documentation, and as a whole, just like better software. And I think that's like the thing with the benefit of making those open source, those projects open source, or just opening them to the public, is that it forces you to do like great job. And you know, a little bit of that is kind of like imposter syndrome of, hey, what are the people going to say about my project? But on the other hand, it's just like I needed to document better the code that I was doing. I needed to provide a very clear README to the projects that I had or that I was uploading, provide kind of like all these guides so that people could use them, you could use those repositories. And as a whole, I think that that practice that I had with, especially with documentation, that I think when you have a personal project, like almost no one really documents the thing, but once you upload it to GitHub or to any place where you can have like public repositories, it forces you to do like great work. And for me, that was a major benefit, like thinking of code as, think about like your coding projects as some sort of content. You want your content to be accessible, to be reachable, to be discoverable. And in the case of code, like you want it to be like usable as well. So thinking about all the things that were needed to have this open source repository being useful for everyone or as many people as we can, even if it was just like a calculator or something very kind of like introductory into coding, it can really kind of like help you out to start thinking of code beyond just like code and think of it as like something that other people can consume as well and optimize that content to be consumable so that other people can easily take it. So definitely there's a lot of benefits from uploading your projects. And aside from that, I know that I practice a lot of Git and GitHub during that kind of like period. So when I did my first open source contribution to a research project on Fun Fact on Twitch, I already knew the process. I already knew how to do the thing. And that, for me, made the whole process of contributing to open source way easier than just like me trying to sort out how can I make this thing happen. And even though at that time, the contribution that I did was also like crucial to the project, it was kind of like just making sure that a project kept working on like new versions of Python. That contribution allowed other people to keep using that particular project. So I think for me, it was like super cool. Probably for the maintainer was just like, oh my God, someone is pushing code into my thing. And let's just accept it. For me, it was kind of like the best experiences on my life. I really felt that I solve a problem. And I think mostly for engineers and people who are getting involved into tech, or at least for me personally, being kind of like a problem solver and knowing that I have the power to solve the thing was, for me, it's kind of like the best feeling that you can get. So multiple benefits: learning how open source contributions work, pushing your projects gives you a ton of visibility about the kind of like things that you like to do. So if you have a recruiter kind of like going through your profile and that's like, hey, tell me your experience, you can be like, hey, here are like some repositories that I've worked on and here's kind of like the code that I write, and having like a beautiful README and a beautiful code, definitely something that people that, well, the technical recruiters really like value a lot just by watching that you have clean code, that you have documentation. So definitely that can make you stand out from probably other applicants while going through the application process on a company.
That's really awesome. And as we're talking about open source, we usually talk about like having a community for the open source and collaborating with other people. For that thing, how can someone like start a community or build an autonomous community?
Well, you know, autonomous communities, it's kind of like a interesting topic in a sense that we think that communities normally are essentially autonomous, especially, for example, when we're talking about like open source and especially like campus experts. Having autonomous communities help us to support more students without me or someone from GitHub trying to tell you what you should do, right? We unfortunately don't understand all the infinite number of contexts that students have, especially like locally speaking. So if you have any local struggles, and I can come to your school and tell you like, yeah, you need to learn how to do open source because that's kind of like what the cool kids are doing. But rather, it puts kind of like the student in that leading position. And as a student that is building a community, you know which are the struggles that your community is facing. And for me, and we want to make sure that we're able to support you through that journey of solving those struggles and making sure that you have all the resources that you might need. So a lot of that is just like, that's why the Campus Expert training is so important, because it gives you at least all the skills that you might need to build a community and solve a local struggle. But also, so that's kind of like the first part. So that will give you kind of like the autonomy and will set you, we'll set a goal for you with your community or what struggles you want to solve and what's going to be the process to solve those struggles. And then what we do is that we, through sponsorship and also supporting with requests, especially like swag, all of these things that students might find really valuable for, I don't know, for attending an event or to bring more people to the event and for them to have like something physical and tangible to take out. It also with those two different ways of supporting, you would basically have everything to start to solve those problems. So the first part, the training, which is kind of like the analytical part and kind of like growing those skills, and the long-term support, which is if you're organizing an event or an activity with your community, you have GitHub backing up those activities. I think that's kind of like a more natural way of supporting or building those communities and giving the community leader that autonomy of doing whatever they feel would help their community to grow or to learn something new, instead of like us being telling you what you should do and what a community should look like or what a community leader should consider or which activities you need to do. Rather, we believe that by giving you the skills and then letting you choose your path as a community leader, and building that autonomy to grow your community on the direction that you want to, has much more impact than any other way of us kind of trying to impose those things, right? Which was never kind of like the idea. On the other hand, I believe that community leaders and autonomous communities need to find and grow their own team and their own community and kind of like find people that share a view and share those values and share an objective on something that they want to do. So, we never look forward to have a Git and GitHub community, but rather what we look for is for you to kind of like, if you're into open source, go open source. If you want to do a JavaScript, a Python, or whatever kind of community you're building, so that you can have like full control on where you want to grow that community and how you can start solving those needs that your community might have. So I think for autonomous communities to be built, which I think was the real question, first of all, you need to have a very clear goal and set a clear direction of how you want to get to that goal, and then have a team of people that will help you reach that goal. And there's two very important parts into that, and one of them is that your team should have not only the passion to build a community, which is also great. It's always great to find really passionate folks about like building communities and teaching each other, but also folks that have the skills for different parts of the job that you need within that community. So there might be someone who's really good at teaching, but is really bad at talking with sponsors. So definitely having that a structure within your community and making the most not only about the skills and passion, but also about what your community wants to get from building a community, which is okay to think about like how a community will benefit me as a member of the community to grow the skills or to get the experiences that I might need for my future job. That can help you a ton to start not only to have your community very much like engage and let them like be also very autonomous. So there's like skills, passion, there's also trust involved in a community, making sure that you're building that trust, not only you as a community leader, but also you as a community leader building that trust with the people and kind of like all the way around as well, where you can trust your community and make and you don't need to be behind them to guarantee that there's something is going to happen. When you have that level of trust, that's just like, that's when you have a fully autonomous community where you don't necessarily need to tell your members like something that they need to do, but rather like they can jump in and tell you some ideas that they have and implement those ideas without you necessarily being there.
That's great. It's like having a mutual trust between the community and yourself would make it have a, like a better relationship with that. For that same reason, it's like, what is kind of the advantage that can have we can have from having a autonomous communities?
Well, once you manage to have an autonomous community and that you have built that trust with people within your team, there's a ton of advantages. One of them is that you can, everyone within that community will be able to dedicate their time on something that provides the most value to the community. So let's say that we organize a workshop for learning how to contribute to open source. And if I can dedicate my time into, let's say that I'm the event planner, so I can just like dedicate my time into making a schedule, finding the speakers, and then someone else from the team can be like, hey, you take control on the promotion of the event. So that person will take all the promotion and all the design and everything that needs to be there. That probably I may not be the best one to do that, but they might be like much more experienced, or they have better skills for making those promotions, right? So making sure, so one of the advantages is that you can dedicate your time into what provides the most value to the community. The second part is making a community of one person is really hard. And having more people allows you to scale kind of like the things that you will be doing. So, you know, if let's say that you're organizing a hackathon, having a team that helps you with everything, it's kind of like a must, right? And I think it's one of the first steps towards like organizing activities or events. So being able to have like a team that helps you out with the event and that everyone knows what they have to do and what is expected from them, definitely can like set you up to make better quality events and scale the events that you will be organizing, so that there's not like one person that ends up like being burnt out and tired of organizing community events and probably leaves at some point, but rather making the whole community experience much more positive for everyone within that community.
Yeah, that's great. Like, since we are talking about communities and we have talked about some of like letting GitHub trust people in the local communities, here we can like ask you what kind of the value of having local language programs and communities.
Well, there's just as always, there's like benefits, there's pros and cons on localized communities, but definitely having someone close to you that you can ask any question is, I think that's like pretty cool. Imagine like I can see myself when I was getting started with open source and kind of like asking that question or finding someone that I can make those questions about, like, hey, which project should I support? Not having someone around can definitely set a barrier of entry. So definitely what local languages and programs and communities have local language programs and communities decrease the barrier of entry and increases kind of like the trust on people and technologies. And that's why one of the biggest contributions that you can make to open source is also creating content, so that people can have a local language to learn that technology and at the same time someone they can ask questions about. So it's one of the multiple like benefits that you can have from local languages, programs, and communities. And also when someone does like a great thing within that local community or that local program, it's really cool to see like when someone in your community is doing awesome work and just like benefiting from the work that they're doing. So setting up kind of like that, let's go like role model of a person so that people can target to kind of like be as successful or kind of like learn their journey so that they can also optimize their journey in tech or in anything. It can be also things that are not tech, but optimize their journey through some experience or some goal so that they can achieve the same level of success. I think that that's something that it's very much like valued.
That's really great. Besides like the local communities, we have some kind of marginalized communities inside the local communities. Do you have like any suggestion, any advice to support them, to find them, and like to understand their struggles?
So that's a very hard topic. I think, especially in tech, there's kind of like a very well-known, let's say, like archetype of a developer. And a lot of people don't feel related with that archetype or with that kind of like, well, yeah, let's call it the archetype of a developer, and making sure that, and that would affect some people to feel that they belong in that particular industry. So by providing support to those marginalized communities, and first of all, you need to learn like which are those communities that don't feel represented in that industry. So if, I don't know, here in Mexico, we struggle a lot in tech, and kind of like how can we support more women to kind of like get into tech related or engineering degrees. There are like multiple parts of that, and one of them is kind of like culturally, women have been very much like not supported to have these engineering degrees because they also feel like super macho, and you know, you need to, and kind of like all those like rough sciences are seen like, oh yeah, you need to be like a guy to be able to be part of that. And definitely like that's not the case, but the culture pushes so much towards that direction that initially you don't even like consider the possibility. And being able to understand who are the marginalized communities and what are the struggles that they have to kind of like feel themselves like they belong in a particular industry are two great steps to get started. So in that particular sense, like once you've learned both, like which are those marginalized communities and what are the struggles that they're facing, then you need to find ways in which you can make them feel included. And that has multiple ways depending on kind of like the persona that you're trying to imbibe to your community or to that industry. So I very much remember in 2018, we organized a hackathon, and we, for the first time, we had a sign language interpreter for people that were deaf. We never did that before because we were not aware that there was a big community that felt left aside from these events. So we reached out to one university that specialized on kind of like education for people with disabilities, and we invited them to be part of the event. They told us what they needed so that people could fit within the event, because hackathons are a lot of an event. So definitely like we reach out, we ask their needs, we make sure that we had everything that they needed. Of course, like with deaf people, something that is hard is kind of like finding someone that can translate. Like how do you translate to sign language or interpret in sign language what a database is? Like there's no sign for database or for open, I think it was like operate OS. Yeah, for OS, there's no like direct sign for that. So through that, we kind of like learned a lot, and it was kind of like a great experience because these folks have never been to a hackathon, not because they didn't want to, but just because like there was never the infrastructure to support them to attend. And it was so cool to have them because we had like sponsors, like really big sponsors. We had like Microsoft and these other like very big companies. And they didn't know about like these people either. So when they asked us for kind of like the post event report so that they can share it within and all of that, they covered in a lot of different like news avenues, well, newspapers and kind of like in many kind of like other contents, they covered this particular school and how cool it was that the event included people with disabilities and that we made sure that they had everything they needed. For me, and also for the students, it was a great experience to know that like this, first of all, that these students existed and how they communicated and how they like solve some of the struggles that they had for their education. And they even like gave a few workshops on Mexican sign language, and it was a ton of fun. I think it's like pretty cool to know a few words in sign language, and it made them felt like they belong in tech. Just like people were really excited to learn sign language as well, so they felt like complete rock stars, and they did an amazing project at the end, and I was so happy that we brought them in to the event. So, you know, I know that's kind of like a story, not probably the definition, but there's kind of like a story on how thinking about their needs, inviting them to be part of the event, having them at the event, and just like making sure that they feel like they belong, provided an avenue for them, first of all, to be able to attend an event, and also to provide, like making sure that they feel like people really care about them. And we really do care about like having these events being accessible, but no one had done an intentional effort before. So definitely with that, we guarantee that more people for the next time that we organize the event, that unfortunately I graduated and I was not able to continue organizing the hackathon, but you know, like people from different backgrounds would know that that's a safe space for them to explore and to join. And I think that's super valuable as a community leader.
Yeah, that's really great. And for that, like I could ask about like GitHub right now, and like what is the value for GitHub to get like supporting leaders and having all of the autonomous community and building communities like that?
Well, you know, GitHub is in a very privileged position in the industry. At the end, what we want to do is to help you folks to become better developers before you graduate. Even if you are studying in a non-traditional education like a bootcamp or online, we want to make sure that you come out of that experience learning or knowing more than knowing everything that you would need to be successful. GitHub as a platform has a lot of benefits. One of them is that we don't necessarily need to push for... We benefit a lot from having better developers in a sense that, you know, at the end, GitHub is a tool for all developers. If you're doing web development, if you're coding in a particular cloud from a particular, like, I don't know, company, that's something that GitHub does not get affected by, but we rather like want to help you folks to become better developers before you graduate, so that, you know, at the end, that helps us, that helps GitHub, that helps the industry, and at the end, it helps you to kind of like be more successful. So the idea of supporting leaders is that we also need to make sure we didn't want it to, and we talked about that before, we don't want to kind of like impose a vision about like how tech should be. And that's why we prefer to give students the autonomy and all the skills to do that themselves, so that they know better how to teach other students or to support their communities to grow and learn. And at the end, I think we've seen that approach has been extremely beneficial, not only for us, but much more for the students to, you know, who get a more visible role within their communities. They get recognized as someone that, you know, even though like we don't really like kind of think as a credential, but definitely in some places, being a campus expert is some sort of way to prove that you know, or that you are supported by a company to do the work that you're doing. And in some countries, that allows the students to get approval to do things. So if you do it as a student, probably you know, sometimes the schools have too much work and they would never prioritize your events. But sometimes, like saying like, "Hey, I'm a campus expert. I'm kind of like trying to build this. GitHub is supporting us." It's just like, "Hey, okay, we can support you with these events, right?" So definitely, it also provides some sort of way for schools to trust the work that you folks are doing. But at the end, the end goal is always, you know, making sure that people from all backgrounds feel like they belong in tech. If you are changing your degree or changing from one industry to another, making sure that you have everything that you might need to make sure that you belong here, or that you feel that you belong here. And yeah, so at the end, I know it sounds like very very philanthropic, but definitely like there's a benefit for everyone in just like making sure that we have better developers.
Yeah, that's great. That's really like for as we are talking about the benefits, like do you have any suggestion for people like to get involved into the open source community? Like if there is any, like there's no direct path for this kind of like questions, but like from your experience, from what you have already seen.
Well, the only great piece of advice that I can give is just like do it. I think there's a lot of imposter syndrome to contribute to open source, and there's a lot of questioning yourself if you have the technical level or the technical skills. So definitely the biggest piece of advice is just like do it and see if it works, then you have done a contribution and congratulations, you're now part of let's say of that group of people that are actively like contributing to open source, or at least like have make a contribution. If it doesn't work, or if your pull request gets rejected, there's a ton of projects that are always looking for someone to help them out. So definitely, I think it's a lot of trial and error. And you know, going back to how I ended up on GitHub, there was a lot of trial and error. But even though like that happened, I still kind of like look for it and. Ultimately, it happened, right? So the same thing happens with open source. Like, if you first of all need to find a project that you either know or have used, or that's kind of like the general recommendation that you have used the project before kind of like contributing into it. So that you understand like what's the project about and how it works, and then you can start kind of like looking into new features or new things that you can add to that project or. If the project has a public repository, just like go through the issues and see how you can help. Most of the times they would have like some one or two issues that are kind of like easy to solve, but just like no one in the core project has enough time to solve it. So you can just like jump in and tell them like, hey, I want to take this one and try it and give it a try and see how it goes. But there's no other way to learn how to make an open source contribution than making an open source contribution, or at least trying to make a contribution. You can watch like 1,000 videos, and I can guarantee that that you will never get an open source contribution just by watching videos. You actually need to do the work.
Yeah, that's really great advice. As we are talking about like communities, I would like to ask you if you have like any blog or any book or anything you suggest people to read or you like, so that they can like learn more about communities or like get more about growing communities.
Yeah, I don't have the book right here, but there's a really good book called Belong. I don't know the author right now, but it's a yellow book, and there's like someone like there with their hands like raised in the book portrait. Yellow book, look for it. And it's a great book about, first of all, kind of like yourself as a community member, and then yourself as like in a community. And it has, what I really like about that book is that it has very in-depth step-by-step guides to how to build a community. And first of all, like who you are, because you're going to build a community without knowing who you are. And it sounds like a very trivial question, but it's harder than most people would think. Like a lot of people pay a lot of money in like different like medical like mental facilities and kind of like mental support to understand like who they are, but definitely like first of all setting up like who you are and what are your values and what are you interested in, and then you can start building a community around that and kind of like how can you make people feel like they can contribute back to the community, like and how can you ultimately, I think, as community someone who builds communities, the ultimate goal is to make sure that people feel like they belong in that community, or make sure that not like they belong, but actually making them belong in that community, and guaranteeing that they have everything that they need for that. So that book is tremendously like well done, well written. And unfortunately, I haven't seen like a lot of people recommending that book. So definitely I would highly recommend that.
That's really great. And for the last question, like for this episode, I would like to ask you, how do you see the future of the open source communities?
Well, I think that's a great question. I don't know about like professional, but I can tell you about the student communities. And I think there's one good thing that came out of the pandemic, and is the access to conferences and the access to resources and to courses and to everything. So there's a lot of content out there. And through the past couple of years, with virtual events, I believe that events became more accessible by anyone. So I could think, let's say, a conference that is coming in a few weeks, and I wanted to give a talk in that conference, I would never have done that before, because I would need to travel and kind of like plan the whole thing and then get there and give the talk one day and then come back. So there was a lot of investment to be able to get involved in events before. And now I think it's like super easy to propose yourself as a speaker or to give a workshop or attend a hackathon. So definitely there's more accessibility for events after the pandemic, or at least like during. We'll see how much like hybrid events like do in the future though. But at least as we can like keep with virtual events, take my vision of open source communities is that they will be like more open and people will have a more democratic access to learning resources. And that will help a lot that for the whole student community to grow in ways that we have never seen before.
That's really great. And thank you for your like time today and for your advices and your talk about your journey till like the end of to the future of the open source communities. I really enjoyed this episode with you and was really happy like to having you today as the first speaker of the Hadith Tech in English.
Thank you so much for having me and looking forward to the next episodes.
Thank you, me too. See ya.